So, I wanted to take some time here at the end of our day and see if there's any questions or comments or anything that anyone would like to bring before you take your practice home. It's good, isn't it? Let's see, it's something like Great Broken Heart. Try Great Broken Heart in Google. If you put in heart of sadness as a search word, that might work with her name. It's a great question. She asked if you see this idea that suffering is a great teacher, which it is, and if you see someone you know suffering, a friend, and you feel this urge to relieve it, how do you know that relieving it is the right thing? Maybe it's being a great teacher. And first, one thing is to acknowledge there's actually not that much suffering we can truly relieve for a friend, say. You know, we may have that movement to want to care, or that movement of care, sorry, and wanting to relieve the suffering and to recognize that's there, but probably, you know, I can only think of one time someone successfully removed my suffering. I was on a long retreat and I was suffering. I got obsessed on the lack of chocolate. There was seriously no chocolate. It was 6 weeks and I kept obsessing on chocolate. And I went in and told my teacher, I said, "This is absurd. I'm here to become awakened and all as I can think about chocolate is think about chocolate." And he reached behind him. And he pulled out a bar of chocolate and said, "See if this helps." Very wise teacher. I don't even remember eating the bar of chocolate. So, very seldom can we actually do something. But if we can, great. So, it's more to realize that. The urge is there. If there's something we can do, I mean, think of all the people who are healers of different sorts, you know, that would you want them to stop healing people because, oh, maybe this suffering's good for you? Of course not. So, where we can literally do something that's helpful, we do it. But watch where there's this urge to do it, but there's not something really specifically skillful. You're just caught in the wanting them not to suffer. And then, if you can notice that and instead go, wow, they're suffering, they're probably suffering over something that you don't have control over. And what you can offer them is the presence, your presence, to be in what is difficult with them. And that willingness to be present in someone else's suffering makes it, we all can more easily meet suffering when someone is really able to be present with us. And that may allow them to meet it, and perhaps there's something in there that would be helpful for them, you know, that they'll move through it, their capacity will grow, and it's impermanent, it will change. So, you don't need to eliminate the desire to relieve suffering, but watch the tendency to think you can do it or to try to fix something in order to do it and see if you can first just be with it and see. There's a lot of, there's a lot. In responding to suffering, we really have to bring not only the compassion element in, but the wisdom element. And so we're always dancing back and forth between that movement of the heart and the wisdom, seeing what we can really truly do. The Serenity Prayer has a lot of wisdom in it. You know, change the things that you can and realize the things that you can't and be with them with kindness.
I think the other piece of that, too, is that cassette as well.
Thank you. Could people hear that? It's really important. She's saying a lot of times we will see, and there's a lot of suffering around social injustice, and for us to sort of be in some sort of indifferent place of like, well, maybe they'll learn something from this, is like a complete misunderstanding, and that it's actually us that has something to learn in that, us being whoever is not, is in perhaps a more privileged position or less marginalized, that it's us that have an opportunity to learn something there by truly being willing to feel the suffering that is there. And to come to that place, as I mentioned earlier, the place of fierce compassion, that to act, to do something. And, you know, so much of the suffering we bump up against is systemic. It's not somebody's, and this is really important, you know, in the idea that there's maybe we learn through our suffering, but so much suffering, it's not somebody's fault. You know, they did not set up the circumstances. And so that's where this desire to relieve the suffering is so important, and to really be willing to step in and do what we can. And to, this is sometimes where people can get confused about what the Buddha taught. It can be like, oh, well, there's suffering, you know, we'll all just sit with it and be fine and feel our tender hearts and not do something. That is not the story. It's very much to have, to be able to feel in our heart and to be responsive rather than reactive, to step in where we can, to be proactive, but to do it not from a place of righteousness, not from a place of I can fix it, but from a place of open-hearted willingness and a willingness to step into the suffering, not hold it at arm's length. And a lot of what we do, especially with social injustice, is hold it at arm's length. Not my problem. But it's, if your heart's open, it's all our problem. Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Not to push
into the suffering, yeah. So I'm not sure if I can repeat all of it, but she was noticing two different things. One, that sometimes being in her own suffering, when somebody can fully be with her in that and connecting and realizing, this is a very important part of the movement of compassion, realizing we're not alone in it, that this is not, that other people have this experience. You may have heard that come out in the meditation. It's like, recognize that you are not the only one having this experience. Even right in the moment that you're having it, other people are experiencing this too. You may or may not be in direct contact with them. But when somebody else is with you, you can sense that not aloneness. And then the other thing that she brought in was be noticing that sometimes she was with somebody suffering and stayed with it longer than was healthy for her. So that's where that being willing to come in and out, whether it's in a meditation or in a situation, being able to come in and out and feel and nourish your own heart and make contact here is very, very important. We have to be sensitive to the fact we're sensitive. You know, like not overloading and not doing it from a place of should, or this is what I should be able to do, or this is what a good person would do. And even worse, this is what a spiritual person would do. That's the worst curse. No. Right. Thank you.
Yeah.
For those who couldn't hear, she was relaying that watching her own daughter go through some very difficult times and seeing, having to sit with more with the wisdom component, that the compassion component was there, but the wisdom of realizing that to let her daughter go through what she needed to go through and to just be with that. And I really appreciate your saying that, because we have to keep coming back. We can't operate just from compassion. We have to have wisdom. To be, we'll exhaust ourselves. We'll actually, it's hard to be appropriate in our actions when we're just, because there's a way that our hearts are wonderful and the compassion is, can be very full, but we'll get overwhelmed or we'll get subsumed in the, or we'll get confused about how to respond. So part of sitting with the difficulty is sitting with it long enough that we see that we connect with the wisdom aspect, that we connect with what is real, that this is truly happening, that we can't resist it, that we can't control it. I've said all these things many times today, but, you know, that we have to contact that as well, this balance. And all the questions that we come to compassion with, you know, like, well, how do I know when to act? How do I know? It all is this ongoing investigation of this balancing act of being willing to fully sit with it, taking care of ourselves in that, seeing the truth of it, seeing the truth of it, and realizing what we can and cannot do. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Yeah. So we'll end in a few minutes. There were a couple of things that I wanted to say before we end for the day, and then we'll do just a very short sit at the end. Is, I think all of you know the Sangha here, the Victoria IMS, doesn't charge anything for these retreats, which I just deep bow to that. This is very, very unusual. Usually most retreats, most places, there's at least a fee for the facility and for the teachers' travel and things like that. But here it's been working that it's just freely offered. And the dana, which is the word for generosity, the baskets for generosity are there at the back. And the one basket is to pay for this facility and to pay for my travel. I think those are the main two expenses. Yeah. And probably some miscellaneous other things.
Yeah. Insurance,
running the computer, those basic, you know, got to open the door kind of things. So there, for that one, there is a suggested donation, but more or less, whatever is appropriate for you is okay. And then also beside that is a basket for donations for my support, because like the Sangha, I offer it freely. And I think it's one of the great things about this practice is that we do it from a place of generosity. And it's completely up to you what you offer, if you want to offer something. And it's really about your own practice of generosity. What feels generous to you? What happens when you contact your own heart? What enlivens your own heart? It feels good to you. And that's the appropriate amount. People always ask, how much is the right amount? It's like, what feels generous to you? What brings joy in that process for you? And everybody is different. We all have different circumstances. And that's why it's so great that there's not a single set number. And when we offer, we get to be in this web. I'm here able to do this as my full-time offering because other people supported it. And so in some ways, they offered you the Dharma. And I'm just the vehicle that carries it around. And when you make an offering, then I get to continue doing this and offer it to somebody else. So we're in this web of generosity. And that's one of the things I really love about this. So thank you if you choose to do that. It's much appreciated. And yeah, thank you. Thanks for both supporting the Sangha and supporting the teachings. And you can do that today or tomorrow or whenever it works for you. And one other thing that's on the back table, there'll be a little bit more about this tomorrow, but I think there's a couple people who won't be here tomorrow, is there's a list. If you'd like to be on a mailing list, you're getting to go outside today, but not in the same way. As was mentioned at the beginning, I teach retreats, many of them that are outside in nature, not all of them. I teach at centers as well. But there's a nonprofit that supports those retreats in nature. And if you're interested in going on a retreat like that, there's a full range of them, from ones that are very rustic, a backpack trip or a canoe trip or just a camping trip, to ones that are, have accommodation and where you go somewhere, ones that are in some place that is inexpensive and rustic, and some that are done by an outfitter and higher end, let's say. Still camping, higher end camping. Some of them aren't camping, but so if that sort of thing interests you, the mailing list is there for you if you'd like. The only reason, you won't be hounded by emails. There's about 4 a year, but the retreats all fill up really quickly. So I like to, for those who want to do something like that, it's useful to be on the mailing list so you get a heads up that a retreat is open. So it's about whether you're interested or not, and it's up to you. Okay, so let's just end with just a short sit together.